Meine YouTube-Story, der Creator-Podcast, diesmal von der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz, die ja weltweit wieder für Schlagzeilen gesorgt hat. Ich bin hier im YouTube-Studio im Bayerischen Hof mit Nina Poppel. Schön, dass du da bist.
Hallo, schön, dass ich da sein kann und darf.
Nina, magst du dich kurz mal vorstellen?
Ja, ich bin die Nina, ich bin 30 Jahre alt und ich bin ja das Gesicht hinter dem Kanal Nini erklärt Politik und auf Instagram folgen mir über 450.000 Menschen, was ich bis heute oft nicht glauben kann, weil das Thema Politik ist ja nicht für jeden was. Bei mir ist es vor allem für jede was. Über 80% Frauen folgen mir, da bin ich besonders stolz drauf.
Du hast es gerade gesagt, Politik gilt als trockenes Thema und trotzdem erreichst du so viele junge Menschen. Wie hast du es gemacht? Was ist dein Geheimrezept?
Ich mache es ehrlich gesagt auf Nini-Art, auf meine Art. Ich habe irgendwann angefangen, mich regt das total auf. Also ich bin auch Politikwissenschaftlerin, habe viel Demokratieforschung gemacht, was mich letztendlich auch dazu gebracht hat, diesen Kanal machen zu wollen, weil ich das Gefühl hatte während der Corona-Pandemie, dass ganz viele Menschen irgendwie Grundlagen da irgendwie Mangelware sind, wenn Menschen gesagt haben, wir leben in einer Diktatur. Und dann habe ich gedacht, wir müssen das mal so runterbrechen, dass das echt jeder versteht, jeder und jede versteht.
Noch ein anderes Vorurteil über junge Menschen ist, die Aufmerksamkeitsspanne ist angeblich so kurz. Stimmt das?
Ich kann das nicht so richtig. Also es ist, ich glaube schon, dass sich was verändert hat, natürlich. Meine Videos sind recht lang für Instagram, also oft 2 bis 3 Minuten. Und auch meine Infoposts, die sehr erfolgreich sind, die sind tatsächlich sehr detailreich, würde ich sagen. Deswegen für meine Community kann ich das nicht bestätigen.
Wenn du jetzt wirklich schwere Themen aufgreifst, worauf achtest du dann, wenn du das umsetzt als Video?
Manche Themen kann man nicht umsetzen, beziehungsweise da sage ich, das finde ich verantwortungslos, weil ich möchte, ja, ich verkürze, aber es darf nie an der Qualität dann irgendwie leiden. Und ich achte darauf, dass die Themen mich interessieren. Es sind selbst interessieren. Ich merke immer, wenn ich selber dahinter stehe und eine Passion habe, dann erreiche ich die Leute. Und es sind vor allem Themen im außen- und sicherheitspolitischen Bereich. Und das ist natürlich sehr geprägt durch mich. Deswegen ist das wahrscheinlich das Hauptkriterium. Immer finde ich es interessant und auch wichtig.
Auf jeden Fall. Jetzt warst du zum ersten Mal bei der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz. Du hast ein beeindruckendes Programm hier schon absolviert. Du hast den bayerischen Ministerpräsidenten hier gehabt, an diesem Tisch den Bundeskanzler. Wie war es so, mit diesen Personen Interviews zu machen?
Das war spannend für mich. Also das war auch teilweise eine große Herausforderung, weil ich kritisch sein wollte, aber natürlich, wenn ein Bundeskanzler vor dir sitzt, also ich weiß, dass da ein Erwartungsdruck von meiner Community ist, das grill den auch, drück da mal den Finger in die Wunde. Gleichzeitig habe ich ein großes Respekt vor diesem Amt und dem irgendwie so gerecht zu werden, so diese Stimme, was will die Community wollen, was will ich und was gehört sich, das war so zum Teil. Wir haben natürlich Pressefreiheit, ich bin jetzt nicht eingeschränkt, wie ich jetzt gesagt habe, was gehört sich. Aber so ein Stück weit ist da einfach ein Respekt vorm Amt und da musste ich gucken, wie ich das mache.
Du warst extrem cool. Wir haben uns teilweise in der Vorbereitung noch gerade unterhalten und dann kam der nächste Gast und dann bist du direkt reinmarschiert und hast mit dem Interview angefangen. Warst du schon immer so cool?
Ich habe den großen Vorteil, also ich war, heute ist Samstag, ich war wahrscheinlich Mittwoch nervös, also so in der Vorbereitung und da merke ich dann so, ich bin unruhig, ich bin nicht so gut drauf und dann in den Zeitpunkten, wo es gilt, Schwäbisch, wo es gilt, da bin ich dann komplett on und dann auch gechillt, ja.
Ziemlich beeindruckend, gute Voraussetzung, um den Job zu machen, den du machst. Es wird ja eigentlich erwartet, wenn jetzt jemand wie du so einen großen Politiker interviewt, dass du andere Fragen stellst und dass du dann vielleicht auch andere Antworten bekommst. Wie würdest du dich jetzt selbst da sozusagen, welche Note würdest du dir geben? Ist dir das gelungen?
Das ist eine gute Frage. Ich bin ja ein sehr selbstkritischer Mensch, deswegen würde ich sagen, 2+. Würde mir trotzdem eine gute Note geben, weil ich finde, auf der einen Seite habe ich schon auch Standardfragen gestellt, ja. Habe mir aber natürlich trotzdem auch Mühe gegeben, manchmal so ein bisschen zu provozieren zumindest. Also ich glaube, ich habe so eine Balance gemacht, weil ich manchmal selber nicht weiß, wer bin ich. Also im Herzen bin ich Politikwissenschaftlerin und Journalistin, aber irgendwie bin ich auch Content-Creatorin und teile auch mal persönliche Sachen oder Dinge, da würden meine Journalistinnen und Journalistenkollegen wahrscheinlich den Kopf schütteln und sagen, so was kann sie doch nicht sagen und machen. Deswegen, es ist einfach schwierig Und ich glaube, da war ich trotzdem noch ganz gut.
Finde ich auch. In welchem Interview würdest du sagen, hast du was Überraschendes erlebt?
Markus Söder, tatsächlich. Weil Markus Söder ist ja auch eigentlich ursprünglich Journalist und der hat dann mal kurz irgendwie die Szene gewechselt und mir eine Gegenfrage gestellt und ich war so, hab dann irgendwie auch nicht perfekt geantwortet und er hat dann gesagt, sehen Sie, also jetzt haben Sie nur ein Beispiel genannt, aber nicht erklärt. Da war ich dann schon kurz baff, hab mich dann aber wieder gefangen.
Okay, interessant. Endlich Politik verstehen, wie du nie wieder keine Ahnung hast. So heißt dein Buch.
Ja.
Das ist ein ziemlich cooler Titel, da muss man auch erstmal drüber nachdenken. War das deine Idee und was ist der Hintergrund des Titels?
Tatsächlich, ich finde dieses Buch, ich hatte da nicht viel Zeit für, aber dieses Buch war immer in meinem Kopf. Also ich habe ganz lange auch mal überlegt, soll ich bei einem Schreibwettbewerb mitmachen? Ich dachte, nee, das wird kommen. Und ganz viele Verlage in Deutschland sind auf mich zugekommen und ich hatte das einfach so im Kopf. Es ist ein Grundlagenbuch und deswegen natürlich dieser Titel war direkt da und auch dieses Buch war direkt da. Ich glaube, das war auch erwartbar, wenn ich ein Buch schreibe, dass ich dann irgendwie mal so die erste Semester POVI-Studium irgendwie runterreiß. Und deswegen, ja, war meine Idee.
Ja, gibt es ein Nachfolgewerk schon was im Kopf?
Ich hatte was im Kopf, aber tatsächlich muss ich so ganz ehrlich gestehen, hat mir das Buch viel abverlangt, also weil ich wenig Zeit hatte. Ich war danach, davor hatte ich eine Podcast-Produktion, dann diese 2,5 Monate Buchschreibzeit und dann wurde die Bundestagswahl vorgezogen und mir ging es dann letztes Jahr auch nicht gut. Also ich war permanent krank und auch psychisch einfach fertig. Deswegen habe ich jetzt erstmal gedacht, nee, ich möchte das machen, was mir am meisten Spaß macht. Ich glaube, ich kann gut schreiben, aber was ich noch besser kann, ist einfach losreden, in eine Kamera sprechen und das ist, was ich machen möchte.
Absolut. Wie geht's jetzt weiter für dich? Was sind die nächsten Schritte, große Projekte und was ich jede Frage, wo willst du in 5 Jahren sein?
Ich will das ganz große Ziel schon immer. Also ich sage immer, ich habe einen Fantasiejob. Dann mittlerweile widersprechen ganz viele Leute und sagen, du hast keinen Fantasiejob, du hast einen wichtigen Job. Für mich ist es immer noch komisch, weil ich diese klassische Journalismuskarriere machen wollte, da auch 7 Praktika, freie Mitarbeiten. Also ich dachte so, ich werde Redakteurin und deswegen ist mein großes Ziel immer noch beim Fernsehen zu landen. Da arbeite ich drauf hin. Die nächsten größeren Sachen, ich darf auf einem, ich weiß nicht, ob ich das verraten darf, aber ich werde...
Du kannst es ja umschreiben.
Umschreiben. Ich darf mit Menschen, die ich bewundere aus der Fernsehbranche, demnächst auf einem Panel sitzen. Das wird auch live übertragen. Ich darf bei der OMR wahrscheinlich sein. Also eigentlich schon. Ich weiß aber gar nicht, ob ich das alles so sagen darf. Aber ja, doch.
Das klingt doch alles ganz hervorragend. Ich hoffe, dass wir viel von dir noch hören und sehen werden und dass wir dich vielleicht auch hier bei der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz mal wieder sehen werden. Vielen Dank für deine Arbeit hier und vielen Dank, dass du noch das Podcast-Interview jetzt relativ spät am Tag noch gemacht hast.
Sehr,
vielen
sehr
Dank
gerne.
Und alles Gute, Nina.
Dankeschön.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for being here. Yes. Would you please briefly introduce yourself?
Yes, of course. So my name is V. Kativu and I am an education activist and a young leader at the United Nations in the Office of Youth from the Secretary General. And I've been doing that for the past 3 years and activism, thinking about education, youth empowerment is absolutely everything I love to do. So it's always incredible for me when I get the chance to weave education into different settings. Like here at the Munich conference. So I'm really happy to be here.
So I was expecting that you would be so humble in your own introduction. So let me please do a proper introduction of yourself. You are a graduate of both Oxford and Harvard University, yes. An active ambassador for United World Schools, like you just mentioned. You have been named a Diana Award Legacy Award recipient by Prince Harry and Prince William.
Yes.
A United Kingdom Rare Rising Star by Members of Parliament, a Diversity Champion by Oxford Vice Chancellor. You are a book author, a founder. Mm-hmm. You have hundreds of thousands of followers on YouTube and you are just finishing your PhD in education.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
How did you achieve all of this?
I mean, I do get asked that question and I never know how to answer it because for me, it's just I'm living my life, and I happen to have people intrigued and interested by that. And I'm still learning. I'm 27 years old. I have a very long way to go. I'm figuring things out. However, I feel lucky, and I believe that to whom much is given, much is expected. And when I posted my first YouTube video, I didn't know what to anticipate. I remember my mom and I celebrating that there was 500 subscribers. She was like, "We cannot fit 500 people into our back garden to say thank you." So this is like phenomenal. We were celebrating. I never in a million years thought I'd see the number 100,000 or 200,000 or see millions of views or be invited to speak at the UN or go and speak to members of parliament, or all of these things that have happened have been a result of YouTube. And yeah, I think that's the only way I could answer how this has all happened. I had visibility and I had an audience that were ready to listen, but also ready to share their story with me. And because of that, I was able to always take the voice of young people into every room I entered, which meant people had to listen to me. The awards and everything that came after, I did not know that could happen. I didn't even know I could make YouTube my career. So it really, I would say, began from a place of anger and passion. I was just angry at the University of Oxford for not having enough diversity. And I thought, this can't be right. If you're telling me that this institution creates our future leaders, and this is the place where our prime ministers are coming from, then if I'm not there, what message are you sending to me, a young black girl? So I just began, took my phone, put it on the windowsill, and made my first YouTube video. And the rest quite literally was history.
Incredible. You have empowered yourself.
Yes.
Now you are empowering a lot of other young people. You just mentioned it. There's a failure of the system.
Yes.
And you need to step in.
100%. I mean, you haven't even asked me a question, but I I can guess what that question would be. Yeah. But like, I just think that there is institutional responsibility to young people, to marginalized people, to girls especially. And my thesis and my PhD is a lot about this. It's thinking, if you recruit me somewhere, you say, we want you here, we want to diversify, we want to make things better, you have a duty of care to retain me there as well, right? We can't have recruitment without retention. So I think some of these institutions around the world, whether it's the UN, whether it's Oxford, wherever I've been, I always tell them, what are you doing for those who are coming after me? You can't just say, oh, we now have V and V feels comfortable and V's great. No. What about 100 other V's? What about the V's that don't even know that this conversation is happening? The V's of tomorrow. So yeah, I always like to hold institutions to account, and people love to see me coming, but also hate to see me coming because they know it means I'm going to call something out and we're going to improve systems. So yeah, I think the world would be a better place if everybody always, when they build anything, they always think about the person outside of that system, the person that they cannot reach. How do you reach them? And when you build in that way, you build for everyone. And that's just what I advocate for.
Well, you are now here in Munich at the security conference. There's a lot of policymakers in this hotel. Do you think they also need kind of an education from what you just said?
Yeah, I mean, I always think, yes, nobody is ever above learning more, no matter how many years of experience you have, no matter what your title and your role is. I think somebody very wise once said, you're never too young to lead, but you're never too old to learn either. So yeah, I think everybody at this conference could take a class from my empowerment workshop on how we make sure that our young people, our marginalized communities feel seen, heard, valued, and that we enable them to exist loudly. So yeah, I think empowerment should be woven into all forms of policy, even security and international relations.
You should have brought a few flyers for your workshop. So share them around.
I don't know who would have signed up, but I hope so. Because sometimes I think we approach the world in such a pragmatic and logical way, and 1 + 1 = 2, and everything is either black or white. There's gray area. Empowerment matters. Ensuring that, yes, you can pass different policies. You can create structures that maybe work for people, but if they don't feel that sense of belonging, if they don't feel like you actually want them there, what does that really do for anyone?
No. Tell us a little bit how you experienced this Munich Security Conference. Mm-hmm. I guess it's your first security conference. How was it?
It's my first, and it has been such a whirlwind of excitement. I'm learning so much on my feet. The guests that I get to interview. I mean, it's a one of a kind experience. I think not many people are having the similar experience to what I'm having. I get to be here as a young person, but also bringing in my audience with me. I have access to bring my camera in. I can go in, capture anything. I can go and storytell thereafter. This for me is a phenomenal experience. And I like to hear from leaders. I can agree, disagree. I can do all of these different things. And everyone's giving me the license to do so. And I think that's really special. So far, my first one has really topped the bar. So I don't know what we'll do next year, guys.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see. So what is your secret recipe to reach you? You mentioned the many subscribers that you have on YouTube. What is your recipe to reach young people where some people say they don't have a large attention span? Mm. Obviously, your channel proves the opposite. So what are you doing?
I mean, I think I'm just remaining honest. If I'm truly being honest with you, funnily enough, is that people sometimes want to give someone a scripted version of reality or what sounds nice. We keep it so honest on my channel. My job as an education activist is to advocate for the education of girls, the youth empowerment. That's what I want to do. But for me to do that, I also have to be very honest with my audience. So while I'm over here giving a speech at the UN and saying, hey, Mr. President, we need to do better, I go back to my young people and say, hey, when that opportunity does come, we need to make sure we're prepared. So are we doing our work? Are we doing our readings? Are we making sure that we are the best we can possibly be so that when that opportunity comes, we're ready? So for me, it's a mix of the two, and especially when it comes to education. My subscribers know we don't play about education. If you have the opportunity to go to school, you better go there, sit up straight, listen, do your homework, do everything. Because actually, there are girls who are quite literally dying because they want to access education. There are some people who are right now refugee status because of circumstances out of their control that can't access the classroom anymore. So it's trying to make sure I'm touching on all sides of this coin, holding leaders to account, talking to young people who have access to not take it for granted, and fighting for the funding and access for those who don't. And it all meets as a melting pot.
Amazing. What are your next step? Where do you want to be in, let's say, 5 years?
Oh, goodness, that is a good question. And it is okay, so the very first step is defending this PhD. I have 1 week to get my notes together, fly to California, and sit in front of my committee and say, I deserve to be a doctor of education because I've done my research. Here's my data. Here are my findings. And this is what makes me qualified. So that's the first immediate. Second one is to sleep. I've been doing this PhD for 3 years. I've not slept in a while. I've been in libraries doing all-nighters. It's time to rest. Then the third, I don't know. I hope to be the head of education at an incredible organization. Wink, wink. Who knows where? Or helping shape policy, doing more research, figuring out ways to include those who are excluded. And whatever that role, title, location, and office, I'll do it as long as we get more girls back in school.
I think you could do all of this. I'm not worried at all. And good luck for defending your dissertation. And also for that, I'm not worried at all.
Thank
if your
you.
Professors have seen this interview, they will probably give you a pass immediately.
Yes, please.
Thanks so much for joining us, V, and all the best for you.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed my experience here.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So great to have you. Maybe you briefly introduce yourself.
So, Bomar Agami, I'm a content creator who talks about world news and events and also some facts about countries. But I try to make it simple, fun, make it in a skit so that's digestible. I try to help in that way.
Yeah, you're sitting here like an ordinary guy, very humble, very nice person. But you have more than 3 million subscribers on YouTube alone. This is more viewers than most TV formats have. So how did you do that?
Honestly, maybe because people like the content. I've been posting for a good bit, but I'm really glad that the people like it, and that's why they subscribe, and that's why they enjoy my content, and they come back for it. Honestly, it's a pleasure to meet you. Like,
On your channel, you are commenting on what is happening in the world, politics, history. Now you are here in Munich in the middle of those world politics, where you meet heads of state at
basically every corner. How do you experience this?
It's a crazy experience. You walk and you maybe just rub shoulders with someone who's probably like head of state or like a former prime minister or prime minister. It's a crazy feeling. It's a crazy experience. But it's amazing as well because all those people who have been talking about, all those people you only see on TV, you finally get to see them and you realize that, wow, they're just like us. Normal humans just like walking around, talking. Yeah, it's a very real and amazing experience.
Yeah. What impressed you most? Which of the interviews that you did?
Which of the interviews? I love doing the interview with Stoltenberg, even though it was shorter because he was super busy. His answers were very intellectual, very precise, and his worries about what's going to happen in the future are very accurate and things that I really agree with. For example, he mentioned that the country is just producing nuclear weapons. It's a very, very dangerous thing that can happen to us, and that's something that we need to stop. That's something that I totally agree with.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed his interview.
And do you think that the politicians that you interviewed, do they give you different answers compared to the interviews that you see with them on other channels?
For the most part, no. To be honest, for the most part, they stick to their thoughts,
to the
message that they have. They try to stick to one form. I didn't see a lot of changes in my interviews compared to their interviews. Like there are other interviews, I mean.
Yeah. I watched a few of your videos, and they look like really complex, like a lot of work. I mean, I do some videos by myself. This looks like incredible research preparation all the time. Can you give us an idea on average how much time you invest in one video?
In one video? Honestly, it depends, because some topics are more sensitive, some topics are... I have to research a lot more to understand the full story, because when I look up a video, I don't just look up one news source and that's it. No, I open one source, let's say from the right, and then another source from the left, and another source that may be more centered, right? So I read different sources, different opinions, and then formulate my own story and try to put it in the video in a way that would be simple and in the same time fun for the audience, right? So I mix in a lot of different opinions and see where the different sources agree, and that would be my video, to be as factual and as accurate as possible.
But you didn't tell me how much time.
Oh, how long? That's why, that's the issue. I don't know how long it would take. Some articles maybe take like 5 minutes to read, and then like maybe 15 minutes to prepare, 20 minutes. Let's say like an average of an hour, hour and a half.
Oh, really? Okay.
Sometimes, and some videos would take longer, some videos would take shorter. So it's very hard to give an estimate because each topic is different.
Yeah.
Some videos are very detailed, so you have to talk a lot in them and research a lot in them. And some videos are just fun. Some facts, some just trivia. So those are a little quicker.
Yeah, so, okay, but all these overlays and pictures you include and deep research, so it's really amazing.
Okay, yeah.
Do you have, you're now a big creator, so do you have people supporting you?
Well, I have my amazing wife who's also has always been with me doing this. She's always been by my side. She also helps me manage everything.
So you're the co-creator?
She is my co-creator, basically, yes.
Yeah. You were born in Egypt?
I was born in Egypt.
And work in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like a diversity of background and experiences. Mm-hmm. Does this influence your work, you think?
I do think so, because I come from different backgrounds and Canada is a very multicultural place. So I see how the different opinions and different thoughts of people emerge in one area. And I try to put that in my videos where I understand every side's point of view so that I don't just pick a side or pick one agenda. No, I understand everyone, I understand where everyone is coming from. And that's where I try to show in my videos.
Okay, amazing. Do you see yourself with being on YouTube and on social? Do you think you're a kind of a new journalist, a new version of journalist, or are you just a journalist?
To be honest, I don't even know if I call myself a journalist. Like, yes, I report news, I make them in a story, but in the same time, I make them in a skit, right? So I would say, yes, I'm a news creator. I do inform people what's happening. But real journalists are the ones who write the articles, are the ones who are out there reporting. I'm here just reading them and try to just give them to the people with a different twist, just to make it more fun.
Okay, interesting. Do we have a specific recipe how you reach young people? Is there something you have to do differently?
Honestly, just make the story more engaging and more dramatic and have some humor in there. Yeah, people love having that, especially in this world where everything's super tense and super serious. Just adding some humor and some interesting drama would be fun for the younger audiences, in my opinion. Yeah,
that's a great approach, because I think it's better to reach people with humor than not reaching them at all, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, okay. So, where do you want to be in, let's say, 5 years?
5 years, that's a good question. Honestly, I keep thinking through, and I do want to make this and what I'm doing into a bigger thing where I am teaching more people about what's happening in the world, but also making it as a way that's still entertaining, still accurate, right? So I still want to be doing what I'm doing, maybe have more influence around the world. Maybe my videos have more impact.
Okay.
Where I can actually make some changes, like real changes. That's where I hope to be.
And how do you want to get this impact? Are you considering running for politics or?
Who knows?
Yeah, I could imagine a lot of roads for you. Yeah. Thank you so much, Omar, for doing the podcast and also for being in Munich and for your work here.
Thanks so much for having me here. It was amazing. It's been amazing. Thank you.
All the best for you.
Thank you.
And for you.